Citizen engagement in government, as measured by such things as the number of emails and phone calls to congressional offices and attendance at congressional district town meetings, went way up after the presidential election, generating predictions of a new era of individual participation. The numbers have declined in recent months, giving a lie to those predictions, and contributing editor Neil Milner is with us to try to figure out why. Why?
Why?
Well, that's my first question.
Well, one way to look at it is that they went back to more normal, but this is not normal times, and there's things that are going to happen that will probably affect it. Let's just go back and look very quickly. The study, the monitoring, is a kind of continuing monitoring process by a nonprofit called the Congressional Management Foundation that looks at the relationship between citizens and Congress and tries to run advocacy programs to teach citizens how to deal with it. And so they found that right between Trump's inaugural, let's say, and just a short time ago, there was an enormous increase in the number of people emailing their congressmen, the number of phone calls. Mm-hmm. And this was all what the foundation calls organic. This is not one of those organized things where someone sends you a letter and says, send it on. These were all kind of individual initiative or small group initiative. They also found that the increase in town meetings, this should not surprise anybody who watched those beleaguered conservative Republicans. Yeah. My favorite was Tom Cotton's meeting in Arkansas. Have to face the crowds. The crowds were about five times bigger than the average town meeting. So what happened is you get this increase in a particular form of engagement. Remember, mm-hmm. we're not talking generally here. And then it stopped and it started to drop again. And the foundation is concerned, because this is their job, they're concerned that we might be moving back to a more cynical politics again. I don't think we ever left the sort of level of cynicism.
More
it's
cynical.
Pretty high. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty high. So that's what the study found, that it's increased. And it's consistent with other kinds of data about the increase in political ferment. There's been a fairly substantial increase in the percentage of people who are now paying attention to the news after Trump. Mm-hmm. Considering what goes on in my house, the following does not surprise me. Women are more likely to have increased their interest in news than men, and Democrats are more than Republicans. That translates into a Democratic-oriented woman sitting in front of the television set watching the news a lot more and being very concerned about Trump. So that's the kind of general situation we're in now, but things are going to change.
Well, you know, people in the Democratic Party who are concerned with the attitudes of Democratic women sitting in front of their television might ask themselves, where were they before the election?
Well, that's a more complicated sort of situation.
Yeah.
And that raises another kind of issue. What we didn't talk about here is ultimately what's going to be the next issue down the road, which will be voter turnout. This kind of participation doesn't automatically translate into increased voter turnouts for the midterm election. What we see now is that there are a lot more Democrats declaring candidacy for Congress than usual. There's really an increase, which suggests some kind of ferment. But it's a long way before November, and whether this translates into increased voter turnout, Democrats tend to have a disadvantage in midterm elections for turnout. And we know turnout can be a problem because certain kinds of people are less likely to turn out. So we don't know what's going to happen. You can assume that turnout is not going to change very, very dramatically compared to other ones. You can also assume we'll have a very low turnout here. But that's the kind of situation there. The other little factor here, there's a couple of things that that this foundation is way too rosy about because they don't talk about. One of which is that once you start getting close to elections, the big money steps in. In 2012, 60% of the campaign donations were given by 0.5%, half of 1% of the population. That's so that you have that sort of thing to have to contend with. The other thing is that they really didn't talk about other kinds of political participation, protests, and so on. They're interested in Congress, and they have a little section in their studying saying people were really too angry, and that you don't influence congressional people by being angry. That, in fact, if you survey people in Congress, this is interesting because it's not the only way to look at this question. If you ask people in Congress, do constituents influence them? And yes, they do. If you look at other kinds of studies that haven't looked at surveys but have looked at the relationship between what people tend to believe and what gets passed in Congress over a long period of time, big surprise, it turns out that unless the political elites want something, it's almost impossible for, let's say, the lower half of the socioeconomic status to have much influence. You have more influence. You have more influence if you have a face-to-face meeting with Congress. Well, who do you think has face-to-face meetings? It's much more likely to be elites. So it's
lobbyists,
a more a more complicated question, but it's pretty clear that there is certainly a level of ferment and intensity and anger that we haven't seen since the Tea Party. And remember, the Tea Party was really kind of co-opted into the Republican Party very quickly.
Well, it was fueled by anger, and that's why your comment about anger puzzled me, because, you know, when I look back at certain social advances made in the country, civil rights, the opposition to the Vietnam War, if those weren't fueled by anger of the bottom 50%, I don't know what they were fueled by, right?
Well, I think that's right, but there was something else going on in addition to anger. You had to know how to use your anger. If you look at protest generally starts in a way that's their view, that people get angry with them. And I mean, that's the history
of
civil rights.
Blocking traffic.
Yeah, a war kind of thing.
Yeah.
The other thing about the Tea Party was made up of a lot of angry people, but they were also made up of a lot of astute, middle-class, retired folks who had plenty of time, had some experience in politics, had plenty of time to devote to this, and channeled that anger into a willing source, at least it became more willing after a while, and that was the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty remarkable and exceptional situation about how fast that happened. There's a lot of anger directed toward the Democratic Party among the Democrats. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. In past elections, people have commented that, and I'm not sure if this is accurate or not, this is maybe just a subjective observation, Republicans find it easier to move in lockstep to a platform than Democrats. The Democrats, you know, I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. Although right now both parties are going through some really
But that's been said.
It's been
right?
said. No, that's right. That the Democrats fight more. It doesn't necessarily. Well, there's a couple things. They tend to come around during election time, first of all, and secondly, that also you don't want to underestimate the historical, well, let's say the last 50 years at least, the tension between the libertarian aspects of the Republican Party and the social conservatives. That's sort of been reconciled.
Yeah.
And the Tea Party certainly began to reconcile it after a while. But I think that's right. The thing about parties, people identify with parties, but what they're really identifying with is a social group, not a bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the average person can't tell you who the chair of the party is and where the office is. It's not about that. It's a kind of social and psychological identification that's very stable and very, very powerful in the way we do politics.
Does it kind of have to hit you where you live before you get involved?
That's one way. You have to reinterpret things so that you see that's the way you live. One of the arguments that's made about why young people don't vote is because politics and government hasn't hit them where they lived yet. As you get older, you pay taxes, you have other kinds of things that links your own problems, your own situations with government. So I think that's the case. At the neighborhood level, it certainly is. We were talking earlier about NIMBYs. You know, you get some not in my backyard thing, and people will just turn out of neighborhoods, whether it's parking or houses that are allegedly too big or whatever else.
Politics is local, right?
Well, it may be different, but it certainly is local and powerful.
Thanks a lot, Neil.
Sure.
Neil Milner is contributing editor of our segment, The Long View, and you can find a link to our Brookings Institute study on citizen engagement on today's edition of the Conversation podcast at hawaiipublicradio.org.